Our first speaker is Gary Urquhart, who is chief of the Immunization Information Systems Support Branch at the Immunization Services Division within the National Center for Immunizations and Respiratory Diseases. Gary came to CDC only fairly recently, in 1998. For some of us, that's very recent. But before that, he had a really distinguished career as a beachcomber in Fiji for 5 years. He actually was working with the World Health Organization on immunizations, but he got to live in Fiji for 5 years, so, you know, I can't say that.
The 5 years
before that was in Ethiopia.
Pakistan and Bangladesh.
So Gary has a lot of international experience, as well as having spent several years as the Deputy Commissioner of Health in Onondaga County, New York, which includes Syracuse as the county seat. And as I say, he came to CDC fairly recently, 1998, and is now the chief of the Immunization Information Systems Support Branch. Take it away, Gary.
Well, thank you. About more than 40 years ago, CDC's eighth CDC director presented at this very conference in 1965 and had a vision for immunization information systems. And I thought I'd put this slide in here because for all the same reasons that he had the vision still lives. We still have a very mobile population. More than almost 40 million people move every year in the United States. And about 30% of those people are less than 19 years of age. So we have a very mobile population. They obviously don't take their immunization cards with them. And so to consolidate all of those immunization histories is a real chore. And without registries, extra immunization occurs. Extra immunization these days really costs big bucks, as we're talking about HPV that's more than $100 a dose and so on. So without registries, we'd have extra immunizations, high cost, and then there's the increasingly complicated immunization schedule that changes every year, increases and in scope and so on. Very complicated for physicians. It costs them money to spend more time trying to figure out what the schedule is and less time with patients without a registry. And then finally, we have a new vision on the block, and that vision is to have electronic health records by the year 2014. The new vision kind of reminds me that about 14 or 15 years ago, we were in the same boat in the immunization registry business. We had a lot of client server systems. We had no web at that time, and exchanging, consolidating information was very difficult. So we have a lot to offer the electronic health record group and their vision, to try to move ahead with their vision. Registries have, in comparison to many EHR products, very sophisticated functionality, including decision support, deduplication, reminder recall, coverage assessment, consolidation of records, and so on. Many EHR products are beginning to offer some of those features, but very little in the way of decision support. Another feature of registries that EHRs and health information exchanges don't have stems from the fact that there's statutory support in many instances for immunization information systems, and that statutory or regulatory support offers some financial sustainability, although these days maybe that's diminished quite substantially. Protection of privacy and security, governance of a program, and data is available to anyone that's entitled to access the immunization information system. With health information exchanges, they're subsidy-based. You need to pay to play, and data access is limited really to practices and not so much to the daycares and WICs and so on. Immunization information systems are also concerned with all the population, even if they don't have vaccinations. We're concerned about susceptibles. We have basically a master population index for our geopolitical areas that tracks children whether they have vaccinations or not. In comparison to the electronic health record or the health information exchange, it has a master patient index which tracks mostly clinical encounters. We have web-based systems, as I've already mentioned, that are operated by state or local governments in comparison to distributed systems. And it's this latter point that I think is going to be very difficult to move ahead with a vision to have EHRs for all practices, because at the the present time, only 20 or 30% of practices, and mostly large practices, have EMRs or electronic health records. Many practices don't have the financial resources to become database administrators or maintain a data system in their practice. I want to move right now to the current status of immunization systems, immunization information systems in this country. And unfortunately, I still have 2007 data. We have gotten quite a good response for the 2008, but it's not ready for presentation yet. So as of 2007, we had 71% of our children less than 6 years of age in a registry. That's almost 17 million children out of about 23 million children. 64% of adolescents, or almost 22 million, 11 to 18 years of age. And to my surprise, 20%, or almost 45 and a half million adults. I have to admit that many of these adults probably aged into this age category, but nonetheless, that's a fairly substantial amount of number of adults that are in these systems. I think I skipped something here. No, I didn't. I want to present the participation rates in another way. Some of you have seen this before. These are the grantees that have already achieved the Healthy People 2010 objective of 95% participation. There are 15 of those grantees, or 27% of all of our grantees. This is the group that has 80%, 80 to 94%. So altogether, 30 grantees have 80% or better participation of children less than 6 years of age. And then add to it the grantees that have 60%, 60 to 80% participation. So altogether in the country right now, there are 40 grantees, 71% of our grantees have 61% or better participation for children less than 6 years of age. The ones that are in white are less than 60%, and some of them, at this point in time, as of 2007 anyways, have challenges. And they're challenges because they have large populations. You've seen it change. Some of them are changing as we speak, and I know already that for 2008, really good progress had been made in New York State, Virginia, Tennessee, California, Kansas, especially Kansas, and even Nevada of late is starting to improve. And I have high hopes that we'll be close to 80% participation for 2008. Provider participation, both public and private, has also improved over the years, and right now almost 36,000 practice sites are participating in registries. 36,000 practice sites in this country. That's a really remarkable achievement as far as I'm concerned. That's 73% of public provider sites, 48% of private provider sites. The data that we got in 2007 showed that almost 80% of our grantees report that they're lifespan registries. They report on all ages. Another factor that's changing, I think Texas is going to change soon if the legislation that Jack mentioned this morning passes their legislature. We have almost 80% of our grantees with population-based information systems, and on the average, 70% of newborn records are recorded within 6 weeks of birth. Almost 90% of our grantees receive and process vaccine and other immunization data from their IS within a month of vaccine administration. And 43% of our grantees can process and return an HL7 message, as well as process and upload a record consistent with HL7 standards. That's a number that's really going to change in the next few years because we'll have more and more people to use HL7 and exchange data with. This particular slide represents both an achievement as well as a challenge. This is the green line is the National Immunization Survey results for 2007. Here are some selected grantees from that group of 30 that has 80% participation or better. Just to compare the completeness of coverage, in other words, I'm using 43133 as a proxy for completeness of coverage, and here's where we are. One of the factors impacting this completeness of histories and completion of this series is the one dose away from being up to date. And you can see what that does in comparison to the NIS if you were to complete that one dose away from being up to date. So it's both an achievement as well as a real challenge to try to improve our data quality, try to take care of the one dose away from being up to date, which in most cases is Hep B at birth, or DTaP 4, or perhaps the second dose of varicella. I want to also just talk briefly about the stimulus package, the HIT stimulus package. You heard this morning about the immunization stimulus package money and the $300 million that's going out the door very soon. The HIT stimulus package focuses on a number of things. There was $20 billion. You can see from this slide that most of it goes to Medicare supplements, to providers, community settings, to hospitals. The other $2 billion out of the $20 billion goes for activities that the Office of the National Coordinator tries to facilitate or coordinate. And so at CDC, the National Center for Public Health Informatics decided that these particular categories were funding were ones that we should try to write proposals for. So Warren Williams and I wrote a couple of proposals which were scored very well, but they're just sitting in Washington undergoing review and evaluation. I have a conference call tomorrow, and I'll probably get some more information about the status of those funding activities. One of them had to do with interoperability with the National Health Information Network. The other had to do with decision support. So we can talk more about that perhaps tomorrow or in the coming days. Just like to spend a little time now to talk about some of the strategies, some of the activities that my branch would like to pursue with our collaborators in the American Immunization Registry Association, the Public Health Informatics Institute, AIM, and others, to move ahead to try to improve some of the data quality, some of the participation activities, and so on. I've said this many times before, we need to use the data that we have, promote the data use. There's a lot of information. Even if you don't have high participation rate, the data is still there to be used. And here's some examples of that. This is courtesy of Jim Lutz in Philadelphia. This shows obviously a GIS map that depicts children who are not up to date for DTaP, children 19 to 35 months of age. The darkest colors represents the most susceptible census tracts in Philadelphia. This is Michigan from the Michigan Care Improvement Registry, and this shows the darkest green will show children 2 years of age with one or more MMRs. These are good when it comes to budget time, and you know, politicians like to see they're competitive, just like physicians and nurses. They don't like to be at the bottom end of the totem pole here. And so showing them a district that has very low coverage is a challenge to them. And they are sometimes very helpful and maybe a little more generous with the budget, too. This is another slide that shows what our Sentinel sites have been doing. They have been tracking, among other things, HPV uptake from 2006 and 2007. More recently, they've been involved with the HIB shortage and some activities around that, trying to understand that shortage a little bit better and its impact on disease. We have substantial issues with data quality still, with the completeness of it, the timeliness, the accuracy of data. Those are all data quality issues. And so some of the things that we have been working on with regard to that, Warren Williams and the American Immunization Registry Association have been working together for over the last 3 or 4 years to produce operational consensus-based operational best practice guidelines, and those include guidelines for patient status or the moved or gone elsewhere or MOGI issue, vaccine-level deduplication, validations of incoming data, edit checks, that sort of thing, and reminder recall procedures, which is going to be out soon. All of these are available on the ERA website. And I think as part of the stimulus package, probably going to involve implementation of some of these guides. Warren's also been working with Rob Savage and ERA on the improvements, the enhancement of our HL7 guide. If we want to be a part of interoperability with electronic health records, we need to use HL7 because HL7 at least version 2.5 will be a part of the interoperability criteria for this year, which will be rolled out in 2010. So it's important for us to be able to be interoperable with EHRs using HL7, and this guide will help us move in that direction. There are also some things that registries do that can help to support clinical practices and public health programs, and those include one assessment that we did with the Research Triangle Institute with Priority Health Plan in Michigan and with the MICR, the Michigan Registry. This assessment involved an assessment of the Priority Health incentive program, provider incentive program, which paid basically about $150 for completion of a series for two-year-olds, as long as it was represented or included in the Michigan Registry. This this assessment revealed that the IIS data increased the managed care plan immunization rates for childhood immunizations, adolescents, and for HEDIS. And perhaps more significantly, this physician incentive program really produced significant savings by reducing chart reviews over a four-year period, chart reviews for HEDIS assessment and so on. And analysis of costs and net benefits demonstrated a benefit-to-cost ratio of $8.06. This is a workshop session, and I'd like you to attend if you can. It's workshop D4 tomorrow from 11 to noon. You'll learn a lot more of the details then. It's quite a good study, and one which we hope to continue with different health plans in the future. Some other things that have happened over the years, and some more recently, is that many of you know that Michigan used a little pop-up window to advise the physician that asked if the physician had done lead testing for this particular child, and it was based on mapping high-risk zip codes where homes are older, built before 1970, probably with lead paint involved. Those are high-risk zip codes in which those houses are present. And the result of this, if a child came from a high-risk zip code, up would pop a little message that said, "Have you tested this child for lead?" That resulted in a 23% increase in lead testing. These kinds of things really help other programs without much effort on our part. Another thing that happened recently was a study from Emory that assessed medical assistant training and where they got information about training. And much to people's surprise, they got a lot of information from registries opening screen, announcing training activities and so on. So this is another activity and educational opportunity, even if they're just simple announcements like this one that appears on the GRITS, the Georgia Registry, announcing various things. Could be training activities, could be many other things. Many registries have these things. These really result in improved training activities for medical assistants, something that we need to do more of in the future, perhaps. Then there is the identification and resolution of challenges and issues. And this is something that that Bill's going to talk about a little bit more in the future. But some things that we've been doing already, our technical assistance team categorizes all of the questions that we get in an attempt to try to help us categorize issues and really try to develop strategies to reduce or eliminate some of these issues that have come along. And it's partly because of some of these things that we have a Registry 101, an Immunization System 101 webcast that describes things for office assistants, for providers, and so on, that good offers also CMEs and CEUs for people to, if they take this this webcast training. So I'd just like to say thanks to you because of your efforts, we're approaching 80%, and we've got another two data years to go here. I think we really have a really great chance to try to reach the 95% goal over the next 2 years. Thanks very much.